Happy Tag Tuesday.
Hello.
Hi, I'm Ann Police.
And I'm Denise Cooper.
We are Two Average Girls. We're glad you're joining us today. We have a special announcement we want to make right off the top. We are taking a little break.
We need a little vacay.
There's some very exciting things coming up in the next little bit for, in both of our lives. I think I've mentioned here before, my son, Cameron, is marrying our social media editor, Samantha Mary Stone. Mm-hmm. That's happening in about 5 weeks, and we're very excited about that. And then there's other things happening in Denise's life.
Yep, my daughter is getting married.
Yes.
She's getting married in June as well, a couple weeks after Cameron and Sam. And she's also having a baby, and she's going to have the baby in September. But it has become a very busy and a little bit stressful for both Ann and I. And so, and Ann's got some other things going on with work, and so do I. Mm-hmm. And so we just kind of need to like step back, take a breather.
We haven't taken an actual break.
Nope.
And I was talking to Denise earlier, just saying some of my favorite podcasts are seasonal, which I'm not trying to come up with like excuses or anything
like
that.
I've never heard of that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't. I've never listened to a one that's been seasonal.
Oh, really?
No.
Yeah, they do. There's some that are. There's some that aren't.
Well, that's the beauty of podcasting. I feel like we can kind of make our own rules.
Right. It's still the wild, wild west over here in the podcast world.
We get to do whatever we want.
That's
we are two key. Average girls who need a vacation.
Truly. So we're going to take a couple months off. We'll be back in July. So we just want to let you guys know we're gone, but not permanently.
I have to say that for all of you who have been with us since the beginning, it's almost been 3 years. Mm-hmm. And I don't think we could have ever expected. I didn't expect to go for 3 years. I never had an idea of how long we would even try to do this. Mm-mm. I had zero expectations. I wanted 100 listeners. Mm-hmm. We met that goal within the first couple days. So mm-hmm. we were good. Mm-hmm. But it's been a very rewarding experience for me on so many levels because it's just been so great to get to know different guests, mm-hmm. to delve into different topics that have been exciting to us or interesting to us. I've learned a lot about you and your family. You've learned a lot about me and my family. I've learned a lot about people out in the wild mm-hmm. who have like messaged us or talked to us about it or have given us accolades and kudos. There's even people who have said, you know, there's some improvement you can make. And, you know, we're happy to hear that sometimes.
Oh, I'm not. I'm never happy to hear it.
No, I mean, it's just been a great experience and I'm so grateful.
Me
honestly.
Too.
Honestly, it's been really, fun. Really great.
We've had a great time and shout out to our support staff. There's a group of people that has constantly supported us and we appreciate it. Sam and Aiden being numbers one and two, but also we can't forget Jason Fries.
Jason, we want to say shout out to Jason. Jason's going through some stuff right now. He's medically got some stuff going on and we praying for him and loving mm-hmm. him all the time. Mm-hmm. But he was our first guest mm-hmm. and he put together our music bed for us. Mm-hmm. It is original just for us. Mm-hmm. It was with love that he made that. Probably in a little bit of frustration because we kept going, what could you tweak it a little bit like
this? He's
like,
I'm a professional musician.
You I play two for Green Day. I think I can do this, girls.
You too with your stupid podcast.
Yeah. But also our husbands. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Hod and Warren.
Yeah. No, they've been super supportive and just like, sounds great. No matter what we do, that's been sort of the party line the entire time. Sounds great.
Yeah, you they don't do that. Care. And they listen.
No, they do.
Which is, we always know there'll be two downloads.
At least two. So we'll be back. We're not gone, but not forgotten. We'll be back sooner rather than later. And we just wanted to let you guys know that right off the top of the show. We'll give you a reminder at the end as well. But yes, so today, we're doing part two of the first part that we did last week, which is the Ruby Frankie story. When we left you, Denise had a great teaser, and it was just like journals and diaries is all she kind of said. There's a journals and diaries aspect to this whole crime, and I'm excited about that. I haven't read her journals nor her diaries because I have a real problem with journals. It's an issue.
You do?
Well, as some of you know, my mother passed away earlier this year. In cleaning out her home, we discovered, we didn't know, but we discovered that she was a journal keeper. Back into the 70s, we had no idea. I knew that she kept journals as of recently, and I thought it was just sort of writings here and there of musings, this is what I did today, that kind of thing. That was not it at all. She dove in depth to journal writing, her feelings, expressing herself, how she felt about others, especially how she felt about her children.
Really?
Uh-huh. It was very detailed. And like I said, it went back to the 70s. We were finding journals hidden all over the house. And when I say hidden, it's like they just weren't sitting out on the coffee table kind of thing. And what occasion do you have to go through your mother's sideboard on her, you know, by her bed?
No one wants to do that.
No one wants to do that. And you shouldn't do that. But yeah, we found a bunch of journals. I'm still finding some. My sister-in-law, Jennifer, put, when my mom passed, Jennifer was there at her place with her, and she just gathered everything that she thought was important and put it into bags and brought it to me. In going through it, I have found 5 journals, and they're little notebooks and whatnot. Contained within these things are the darkest, most judgmental, horrible things that you've ever read about people in your family.
Oh my gosh.
So it got to a point where there was a main journal that we all knew existed. And that was, of course, the source of all, we got to get rid of that. We got to get rid of that. When my sister-in-law brought all the stuff to the house and we were preparing to go to my mom's burial, she pulled out the journal and was like, here's the journal. This is the one kind of thing. And so, of course, you open it to shake it out to make sure there's not an important document in there. My dad's death certificate, $100 cash. You know, you just want to make sure there's nothing. But it was written on back and front. And it was one of those big ones, you know, that's kind of hardbound. It's the 3-ring binder kind of thing. You couldn't help but open it and sort of start breezing through it, especially when you see your name.
Well, let me just stop you right now.
Yes, please.
I have a problem with writing in journals because I don't want people to hear my inner thoughts when I'm gone.
Keep those to yourself.
Well, that's what I know. So I can't even imagine writing this down and then in my older years not thinking to myself, maybe that would be harmful to the family if they find it.
Just the opposite. Several years ago, she started telling me about this journal. So we knew that there was like at least one main journal. My mother started talking about how she had this journal and that she was finally going to set things straight.
Oh.
People were finally going to know what she really thought. No one got away from it. Mm. To the point that when we were at her burial and the few people that did show up, one of the women who is a terrific friend to our family, has been for years, rolled up on me and goes, did you find the journal?
Oh my
gosh. And I looked at her and I go, what do you know about it? She goes, oh, I know all about it. She was ready to set the record straight. Now, before anybody goes, these are the musings of an old woman who has dementia.
No.
Like I said, this went back to the 70s.
Also, your mother did not have dementia.
My mother had no dementia. She was pretty sharp all the way up to the end. So when this main journal sort of got its traction at our house, my husband sort of disappeared momentarily, came back and goes, I've started a bonfire out front. We were up in Northern California where they have bonfires. He goes, I've started a bonfire out front. Give me that.
Because he knew what was going to happen if everyone read him.
Well, we're just kind of sitting around. And
your name's going to be in there.
Of course it is. And I was like, I'll go with you. And we walked out and put it on the thing and it didn't burn immediately. So he grabbed lighter fluid and sprayed it directly on this sucker. Because that's how toxic a journal can be.
It can be.
But don't you know these people who I love, who are like, family history is my life.
Yes.
And they're obsessed with their grandfather who came over to Ellis Island. And there's these beautiful stories about how they almost starved to death and then they met this guy.
Yes.
Those are wonderful.
Pioneers who crossed the plains.
Yes.
That's interesting.
I will never forget in high school, we studied the Donner Party.
Right.
And they journaled.
journaling is important.
Very.
It's also very cathartic for people.
It is, yeah.
And that's the reason that I know that a lot of therapists, I know that a lot of people who have got addiction issues, who have other issues, really use journaling to help them get through it.
Yeah.
Now, maybe that was what your mother was trying to do. Just be cathartic about it. Just get it off her plate. I mean, they say if you want to get something off your mind, write it down.
Yes, but I'm following you up to a certain point, and then you toss it in the fireplace because you've already written it down.
Right.
You don't. Can you imagine I'm writing the worst thing I could think of about my son in hopes that he'll find it?
Well, that's the part. We have a friend, a mutual friend, and her daughter found a journal that she had written. And when inside the journal, she had written something that was not very nice about the daughter.
And the daughter found it?
And the daughter found it.
No.
And, you know, she basically said, my daughter's being a bee.
No.
And she was.
Yeah. Okay. That, yes. But.
But she found it. Mm-hmm. And it really hurt the daughter, obviously. But it could have, I mean, the question is, what do you write in your journal? What's okay? Is it not okay to be real?
I think you have to consider the impact. Who's going to read this?
And why?
What do I want the impact of that to be? I don't want my daughter to ever know that I called her a bee.
I know.
So I'm going to write that down and I'm going to tear it out and I'm going to burn it like we're telling you to do right now.
So I think that journaling is awesome. I think journaling also, in your case, is a great segue to our Ruby Frankie case.
Let's do this.
Because where we left off, we had talked about the interview that Kevin had done with the police. It was the second interview. The first interview that Kevin did was really he showed up to the police station and he wanted to pick up his children. Well, if his children aren't there because DCSF has them, right? They're trying to get to the bottom of how deep is this case going to go? We know we have two children that have been horribly abused. We know the mother's involved. How deep does it go with the father? Father has now been estranged for an entire year, has not had any contact with the children in that year. He shows up to the police station and he's like a deer in the headlights. Days later, after he gets a sense of the reality of what's going on, and I'm sure got an attorney and somebody told him, tell him everything you know. You need to separate yourself from this situation because you're going to get brought into this. And I have to say, my own opinion is he is personally responsible for a little bit of this because he should have been a bigger man to be the advocate for all of his children. Your wife and her, you know, business partner / therapist, don't tell me I can never see my children.
There's sins of commission where you're in it, and there's sins of omission, and he was certainly a sin of omission. He stepped away when he should have been more involved, but that's just our whatever.
And again, obviously, a lot of families separate, and fathers don't see their children for a long time. My dad and mom separated, and my dad stayed away for a really long time. Now, this is in the day, though, when there was no cell phones. You had to call the house to make a phone call and talk to your child. I remember my dad did call me at my workplace for the first time, but it was a month or two after he left. I didn't see him. I can't imagine being a small child and having my dad leave for an entire year and not make contact with me in this day and age with cell phones and, you know, messaging on Instagram and social media. What is going on? That has always been my question to him, has been, where were you? You're living your life?
Right. Who knows?
So in this interview, Kevin asks the police if they have found, and this is in quotes, the pen papers.
The pen papers?
That's what they call it.
Okay.
A journal where Ruby wrote hundreds of pages of information related to Jody and Pam since August of 2021. Now, we'll go back. Pam is one of the other people that's part of this. Pam is also the woman that I believe kept the two middle children at her house.
Yes.
The police go to their house to find them. There's no abuse there. There's nothing being done to them. They're fine. He says that they contains information that was only meant for God to see once he turned them into scriptures. This is what it said. Since they would never want them to see the light of day, and he's curious to read them.
Who, Kevin was curious to read them?
Yes.
Okay, so he hadn't read them.
He knew that she had been keeping them. I could only imagine, I've read that over and over again. Like, what does that mean? It was only going to be done when moved into scripture. We know that most of this entire case is based on two women using a fanatical extremist viewpoint of the church and its teachings to instigate and move forward basic abuse for these children and many other people.
A cult.
It was basically a cult. Mm-hmm. And so we know that that is supposed to be, but she really has a high opinion of herself. And that's where I'm getting to the fact that this woman has written down paper after paper after paper, page after page after page of information about what she was doing to these children and how she was abusing them. So much so that she is not afraid of being caught. Mm-hmm. She's not afraid of it seeing the light of day. Because if you're that afraid of it, why are you keeping track?
Exactly.
Just like your mother. Mm-hmm. She's not afraid of this.
No, she wants it to be celebrated.
She wants it to be celebrated.
So did the police go in and find these journals after they were arrested?
They did.
Okay.
So they end up finding the journals. And really, honestly, that was probably the coffin
The
nail in the coffin for them. Because, listen, the kids obviously are the main, that's obvious what's happened to these kids. But if you leave it to Jody and to Ruby to describe what happened, they could make up anything, right?
Sure.
But these journals set the record straight. According to a online source called The Cut, and it's entitled... it was written on March 25th, 2024, the most disturbing details from Ruby Frankie's diaries. The handwritten diaries detailed how she carried out her abuses, mm-hmm. including starving her kids, making them perform grueling manual labor, and once attempting to smother her evil and possessed, and that's in quotes, son underwater.
This is all written in the diary.
Yes. Okay. It's all in the journal. Mm-hmm. She says in the diaries, in redacted entries, she repeatedly wrote that her, and now there was redaction, but even with the stuff that was not redacted, this is what we're hearing. This is like really serious. She repeatedly wrote that her son and daughter, referred to in the diaries as R and E, were spawns of Satan. Okay. In July 2023, an entry about her son, Frankie wrote, "I will not feed a demon." According to the diaries, Frankie and Hillebrandt shaved the children's heads as punishment, forced them to work outside in the heat. Now, they're in southern Utah, and it gets to be like 115 degrees outside. And what I read and what I heard from testimony and from other witnesses was they were making them do things like walk barefoot outside in a cemetery and pick up glass and rocks. Mm-hmm. There's a video of her son doing that, wearing clothes. They made him sleep outside in the elements at night and all day long. And they denied them beds, all purportedly to break their ties with the devil. If you can engage a weak-minded soul in physical activity of obedience, you can begin to break the bond that Satan made with the weak. Frankie wrote in other entries, she called her son a compulsive liar with a cold, dead heart. Last July, Frankie wrote that she shaved the boy's head for refusing another demand. After he attempted to run away the next day, she told him he was like a snake. In quotes, she said, "He slides and sneaks around, looking for opportunities when nobody is watching." Frankie wrote in an entry on July 10th that on her son's birthday, in the following day's entry, she described holding his nose and mouth and pushing him in the pool. Big day for evil. Frankie wrote at that time, she also takes aim with her now 10-year-old daughter in her diaries, describing her as manipulative and recounting how she made the girl stand in the rain for hours. She cut off her hair and once doused her in dog wash water after she complained about not eating for a few days.
For a few days. Mm-hmm. We talked about that quite extensively in our first part one of this, and it's so upsetting.
Not only, from what I understand, she cut her hair as punishment because she believed that she was vain. Mm-hmm. And yeah. She only cared about her looks.
Sure.
So she cut it and then cut it some more. And then they basically, when the police found this girl, E, Her head was shaved.
They didn't know if it was a boy or girl. And so it was.
It just kept going. Like, that's you're going to punish her more and more. Mm. In addition to Frankie's diaries, the attorney's office also released videos, police reports, and interrogation from investigations, including clips of Frankie's son being interviewed by authorities after his mother's arrest. When asked about the wounds and lacerations on his ankles and wrist, the boy told investigators he got injuries because the injuries were caused because of me.
Mm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
He later told investigators Hildebrandt had bound his feet and arms with weights and applied cayenne pepper and honey to his open wounds.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like these diaries were a blessing in a way, because again, if there was no proof in writing, in her own handwriting, in her own way of speaking, she could have denied this or gotten out of it some way.
Yeah, there were a lot of opportunities for them to slip out. But the diaries and whatever are proof that something else was going on. In case folks don't know, both of them pled guilty. Both Jody and Ruby pled. So there was no jury trial, no big media circus, thank goodness. They were sentenced in February to 1 to 15 year terms in prison served consecutively. Now, under Utah law, the law says that the maximum sentence that they can serve for consecutive terms is 30 years. So that's the maximum that both of them can do. I think there will be parole hearings where they sort of plead their own case and probably throw each other under the bus, whatever. I think these journals will probably come in handy for people who want to make sure that they stay behind bars as long as is humanly possible. I don't know how kind the prison system is going to be to either of them, but I know there was some hope on the part of Ruby that she would get, of course, a much lesser sentence and possibly be able to serve her time outside of prison, maybe with an ankle bracelet on and whatever those things are called. I don't know that she's going to get that. I think that's probably asking for a lot.
Ruby's first phone conversation with her husband at the very beginning when she's arrested, the day after she's arrested, you can see a progression of she literally doesn't understand why she's there. She literally doesn't comprehend what the world could possibly think was wrong. Same with Jody. Jody. The same with her. She talks about, we didn't do anything wrong. She's on a conversation with a male that's not identified, and she starts quoting scripture. She starts talking about how she has been wronged and how actually she starts reading scriptures and becoming this martyr type of person and explaining to the person she's talking to how God put her on this place for this reason and how you can't even discipline your kids anymore. I mean, this is what those are the quotes she says in this conversation.
Right.
She literally has no comprehension that there's something wrong. When it comes to Jody, okay, let's just say that. These are not her children.
No, they're not.
They're not her children.
No.
Now let's talk about Ruby.
Yeah.
Shame on you.
Right.
You are sitting there, the first conversations you have with your husband, you do not understand, you can't comprehend. You start talking about, am I on TV? She wants to know if they are talking about her on TV.
Yeah.
She's being flippant about that. Fast forward to a few other conversations that you can hear her having with not only her husband, but with her sisters. Her tune has changed. I've listened to every single audio pull that I can get my hands on, right? I wanted to find out if I thought that this woman understands where she's gone and where she is now, and if she deserves this.
She didn't qualify in the psych eval as having enough issues that they couldn't do like a normal court hearing with her. She didn't qualify. She was fine as far as the psychiatrist said. Because I've heard some of that audio too, where she's just like, she's fluxumed. She's like, wait, I don't understand this.
I don't think she's mentally ill in the fact that she can't comprehend what she's done. I think she's a psychopath of some sort and doesn't think that she's responsible.
Right.
I think that she thinks she's deserves to do these things because she's the mother and she's going to discipline. Her entire package on social media has been this hard-nosed strict LDS woman who is going to make sure her children toe the mark and do all of these things, mm-hmm. and at any cost. I think as a mother of, when I was a mother of small children, I found having a church community was really important for me and my kids. I felt like it was a support for me. It was a support for them because they had so many, there were so many people that also believed as we did. And so it would be helpful for them to be stronger, to be do all of these things. She took it so much further than that, yeah. right? Because she got on social media and she became this, I don't know, this expert. We talked about that last time, which you and I could never wrap our brains around. I never felt like I ever got really this mother thing down, mm-hmm. right? Because as soon as you figure out what you're supposed to do, it changes. Mm-hmm. And their children become different, mm-hmm. and you become different, and you evolve. So it's just very interesting to me that this woman, she changed. All the audio pulls that I listened to had something in common for me when I listened. And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it's just my cynicalness going there. I feel like she continues to be on a show. She talks to her sister on the phone. And when she talks to her sister on the phone, she's explaining to the sister. And again, all phone calls are monitored yeah. and recorded. She talks to her about how she's doing certain things so it looks good.
Yeah.
It's going to look good for the court. It's yeah. going to look good for my parole. It's going to look good.
I assume you saw that video of when they handed down that sentence. Mm-hmm. She looked devastated. I truly don't think she expected to get the sentence that she got. I think she was like, they're probably going to let me go or whatever. I don't know what her thoughts were, but it was the look on her face was sincere. She couldn't believe it.
I believe that was sincere.
Yeah, she couldn't get over it. Like, they're not believing what I'm saying. Reminds me of the whole journal journey that I just took. It's like once they see the reality, they're gonna truly understand me.
I would imagine, and I don't know what's gonna happen. She will be up for parole probably in 5 years or whatever, something mm-hmm. like that. Yeah. I would imagine that they will take into account if these children are adults yet, and they won't be, mm-hmm. right? They won't be adults. They will.
The littlest one is 10 right now.
The littlest okay. one will be 10. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine. I don't think that as a mother, she should be let out until these kids are grown and have their own children so that she can't have any kind of influence on them whatsoever.
That's such a good point, especially given the dad's inability to father. The case of Sherry Papini is a perfect example of the courts siding with the dad. That dad went into mm-hmm. court and made sure that he got everything regarding those kids, like all the visitation. I think she can be in a room with them, but it has to be monitored. There is no circumstance where she can say something to those kids without a social worker or a psychiatrist hearing it. That would be fine and good in regular circumstances. This dad, Ruby Frankie's husband, estranged husband, Kevin, has proven to be quite problematic. He cannot seem to get out from under her spell. So I think you're exactly right, whereas she can be released from prison, but it has to be after those kids are 18 years old. There cannot be an opportunity for visitation without them going, no, mom, thanks, I'm good.
These are all women who have the ability to make others do things.
Right. On their behalf.
On their behalf.
And it doesn't make sense.
I watched the 8-passenger vlog. Now I'm watching it back, you know, but it's not appealing to me in any shape or form.
You mean you're watching it knowing what you know now?
Yes. Yeah. But even the way she presented herself as a mother and how she treated her children in the video, it went against my practical sense. Mm. It made the hair on the back of my head kind of stand up just listening to her, because I don't like that kind of condescending, I'm holier than thou, I do it better than anybody else. I don't like Martha Stewart for that reason.
What?
I know.
Wait.
You didn't know I didn't like Martha Stewart?
No. Listen, we're so busy talking about Oprah that you never admitted to who you don't like.
Yes. I don't care for her.
Huh.
Mm-hmm. You okay. love her?
This will be a podcast for a different day. I'm going to hold off.
You love her?
Love Martha Stewart. Love.
Oh, yeah. I don't care for her.
We're going to do a whole Martha Oprah situation when we get back. Don't worry about it.
I mean, I like her now better that she hangs out with Snoop, but
for
still.
Real.
Before, I wasn't really a fan. But those are the kind of things I'm not into
right.
at all.
I get that.
So I'm just hopeful that there is no parole. Like, I hope that the parole is like 20 years from now. I believe that both. I think that Jody should be in life for prison, in prison for life.
She's crazy.
The reason I'm saying that is because this is not the first time that she has mentally and emotionally and physically abused somebody. Mm. Her niece came out and spoke out right away after this happened. This girl was a young child, and she is the niece of Jody. And when she was a teenager, she was taken to her aunt's house to visit. Mm-hmm. Grandparents, there was a whole, it sounded like a family reunion type situation.
Let me read a few quotes mm-hmm. from Jesse.
Please.
There was duct tape, starvation. I was emotionally isolated and tortured. Sound familiar? Mm-hmm. That's me. Back to Jesse, being forced to sleep outside in the snow, telling my family that it was because she was afraid that I was going to murder her in her sleep, she being her Aunt Jody, mm-hmm. telling me that Satan was working through me, and all the while I believed what she was telling me. She's a 16-year-old girl, you know. Another distressing incident recounted by Jesse involved being tied up in a car, forced to lay down on the ground, and driven into the mountains where they were made to run for hours. She tied me up in that car and made me lay down on the ground, drove me into the mountains, and made me run for hours upon hours. Despite reporting these incidences to the police, Jesse claimed that no action was ever taken. Jesse said, I went to the cops, and the cops did nothing. Jesse said that there was not only physical abuse, but emotional and severe spiritual abuse as well. This woman is so articulate now and just relieved. She seems relieved.
She does. And I think she feels vindicated because yes. somebody is finally listening.
Yes.
And I feel sorry for her because she has done so many interviews and she seems graciously allowing these people to ask her the same questions yes. over and over again. Nothing mm-hmm. really new. One of the things that was striking to me is that she said that she was isolated for hours, like 12 hours a day. As a matter of fact, her aunt would take her with her to work and put her in the basement mm-hmm. of this building mm-mm. to stay by herself. Mm-hmm. There was coworker that was interviewed that would see her on a regular basis and thought that was odd. And Jody would tell them that I'm bringing my niece there. Don't talk to her, whatever. They felt so bad for her because the girl didn't have any kind of warm clothing and it was freezing cold in the basement.
In the basement.
That they left her a jacket to wear.
Oh, man.
Okay. Mm. But this is what she said in one of the interviews. She says, I was forced to sleep outside in the snow. I was isolated for up to 12 hours a day. If someone spoke to me directly and if I wasn't wearing duct tape on my mouth, I had to just stare at them and not respond. Okay. I say that because have you ever seen the very first police interview with Ruby Frankie? Specifically, she is sitting there and it is on 2020 when they did the coverage of this,
uh-huh.
there was a really cute detective that was in charge of this case. And the detective brings in Jody and she says to her, I have a few questions to ask you. She starts asking her questions, but instead of answering, there's this long pause and she's staring. It's almost as if she's staring behind this girl. Like she's staring right through her.
This is Ruby staring through the detective.
This is Ruby. I don't know if I say Jody or Ruby, but no. This is Ruby mm-hmm. staring through the detective. She does not speak to her. She won't speak to her. She's staring at her, but she does some long blinks.
Oh, jeez.
Almost as if she's like doing some kind of Morse code.
Yes.
With her eyes.
Yes.
Like blink three times if you hear me. It is the creepiest, strangest thing. Mm-hmm. But when I read this.
She's all in.
She's all in.
But that's how cults work. Like you're there at first because they're offering you something that you couldn't get on the outside. And then by the time you
realize it's too late. You're drinking the juice and you're dead.
Literally Jim Jones.
I mean, literally, yeah. You have no way of getting out of that.
Right.
I went on to Jody's website because I thought.
Is it still up?
It's still up.
What the heck?
It's still up. Jody Hildebrandt, Information and Reviews. They say she's an author, a life coach, and the founder and creator of Connections, a classroom based in Utah. The curriculum is strongly based on her 5 years of experience working at the Cirque Lodge and Drug Rehabilitation Center and focusing on treating addiction. Okay. Mm. She talks about the core teachings of Connections is that for a person to achieve true connection, okay, this is in quotes, with another human being, they must not be in distortion.
Oh, yeah.
If you hear this case at all, you will hear a lot about the word distortion.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's a catchphrase that all of the fitness coach, the mental fitness coaches that she produced talk about. Distortion is a broad term defined by Jodi. By taking her course, people learn that they are in distortion by the following reasons. Okay. Being addicted. Okay. And this is in parentheses to a spouse.
Oh, please.
Being addicted to your spouse, to work, shopping. Okay, I've already right now got two out of the three.
I'm totally addicted to many of those
things. I'm addicted to my husband and I'm addicted to shopping.
Absolutely.
Okay, electronic games, sleep.
Oh, I'm totally addicted to sleep.
Social media.
No.
Driving.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know what that means.
That's the thing. It doesn't have to make sense.
What do you mean driving? I have to drive. Am I addicted to it because I can't live without driving?
You're driving too long. You're driving too far.
I got to get to work. It's 30 miles. You're
too anxious to drive.
Receiving compliments.
Oh, well, chalk it up. I'm also addicted to that.
Exercise, eating, drugs or alcohol, sex.
See, there's no one that can look at all those things and go, well, I guess I'm addicted to some. And that's where she got
pornography.
You. Whatever.
Hobbies.
Come on.
Scrapbooking is definitely a distortion, guess. Entertainment.
Yeah.
The things you can become addicted to are endless. Here's another way of being in distortion: living in shame and denial. I bring this up because her niece talked about the shame that she kept talking about with her and how she was in denial. She was so cruel to this girl.
Mm-hmm.
And she can articulate it so well that this girl was ready to jump off the side of a building to escape the pain.
Mm-hmm.
She was ready to basically subscribe to anything and anything to make it stop. Knowing you are not good enough. That's okay. Distortion. Okay. Being codependent in your relationships.
Okay.
Living in lust. This woman has a thing for sexual issues.
Yeah, she does.
And that tells me something about her.
Yeah.
Okay. Living in lust, being sexually attracted to your spouse.
That's a bad thing, she's saying.
That's what she's saying. Okay. Being sexually attracted to your spouse. I thought that was the whole point.
Well, why would anyone get married if they weren't? Okay.
Controlling and manipulating others. Again, I think what this is right here is a blueprint for her mind.
It is.
This is exactly what she's dealing with for herself.
Yeah.
And that's why she says, Jodi asserts everyone is in distortion and all experience the above, but she can help you to overcome distortion and live in truth.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Jodi teaches the three core principles. You have to be impeccably honest.
Okay.
Rigorous personal responsibility.
Okay.
And humility.
Well, it sounds like she's doing a couple of those things. I don't know how humble she is, but...
I'm just saying, this is the mind of a true psychopath.
It is. I was just looking up the word distortion while you were talking.
What does it say?
Well, I think of everything, of course, in TV terms. And distortion means unclear. Mm-hmm. Like an interrupted signal has been distorted. It gets a lot more, it's much more book smart on these definitions than I would say. Distortion is the act of twisting or altering something out of its true and natural state. Which that makes sense.
Yeah, but how are you in distortion if you are sexually attracted to your spouse?
Well, this is all part of the cult mentality.
Like to make something that's normal and beautiful and good be bad.
Be bad. That's right. We're going to take the good and make it bad.
Here's my personal opinion. Thought about this from the day one.
Tell me.
This is an unhappy woman who hates men.
Yep.
And who literally doesn't want anybody else to have any kind of joy.
Correct.
This is just who she is.
That's right.
That's all this is about.
And there are people who live their lives like that. We all know someone who's miserable.
I think we described somebody at the beginning of this podcast.
Yeah, it's true. We did. Wow, look at Denise bringing it back around.
I'm just saying, there's a lot of people who are unhappy and we really love to make everybody else as unhappy as they are.
That's right.
But she was making money at that.
That's the thing. That's the twisteroo. She was making money at it and she was bringing people in. That's the confidence of a psychopath.
She got money and power.
Yeah.
She got the two things that psychopath gets,
mm-hmm.
right?
Let's talk about Ruby's statement.
It is extremely long.
I'm not going to read the whole thing.
No.
It's because it, essentially at its core, it's just boring. But this is when they were sentenced, and everyone, not everyone, but sometimes there are situations when you get sentenced to prison time, you get to make a statement. Now, what I like best about what happens in court is the victims get to make a statement. That did not happen in this particular case, I think because it didn't go to a jury. It was just a, I'm pleading guilty. So here's what Ruby said. I'd like to make a statement without any intent to change my stipulated sentence. Okay. For the past 4 years, I've chosen to follow counseling guidance that has led me into a dark delusion. What do you think about that? Immediately assessing blame and getting it away from her. Mm-hmm. My distorted version.
I know.
Can you even?
Of reality, yep.
Yeah, went largely unchecked as I would isolate from anyone who challenged me. I was led to believe that this world was an evil place filled with cops who control, hospitals that injure. This was a little bit of a turn for me. I'm like, what's all this? The cops who control, the hospitals that injure, government agencies that brainwash, church leaders who lie and lust, husbands who refuse to protect, children who need to be abused. What?
I know.
Children who need to be abused.
I know.
My choice to believe and behave this paranoia culminated into criminal activity for which I stand before you today, ready to take accountability. I'm going to just fast forward because there's a whole bunch of paragraphs here that she's talking.
Let me just say this.
Yes.
I think when she says, I was isolated from anyone who would challenge me.
Yes.
It's interesting because her family has made statements. Her family was trying. They were very well aware of the change.
In Ruby.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Her parents wrote a letter to the courts and it was very articulate. They were on a mission for the church in a foreign country.
Mm-hmm.
Their statement was to basically have mercy on their daughter.
Ugh.
But they described a woman who, before meeting Jody, was a different person.
Sure.
Thankful for them, they loved her unconditionally. And
yeah.
they wanted the courts to give her some grace. Because she wasn't always like this. Her sisters, who also have YouTube channels,
yeah,
have come out and spoken. I saw one sister talk about how they tried over and over again to get her to listen. It's so bad. She was so bad to everybody in the family that when they got together in family groups, that everyone just had enough. So much so that they were ready to tell her that if you can't stop coming here, mm-hmm, and talking about connections, mm-hmm, and talking about all these things that which she made a very clear point to say that we did not believe were good or true or right, we won't be able to have you come here anymore. They didn't get to that point where they had told her that yet, but it was going to be at that point because they couldn't take it anymore.
Right.
Another sister, I felt sorry for her because she was defending herself in this statement, which was that they were getting backlash. The family was getting backlash for not attempting to do anything and everything possible to save those children. That the family could have done something, like I'm saying about the father. The father, to me, had a personal responsibility to know where his children were.
Yeah.
And what was going on. Speak to them on the phone at least, right? Like,
right.
Make contact. She defended herself by saying something to the effect of, people have basically said that if they were in my shoes, that they would have kicked down the door and done whatever it took to get those kids away from her. And her statement was, we couldn't do anything that was against the law, or we would have all gone to jail. I mean, the courts would not uphold me kicking down a door and going after these kids no matter what. They didn't see the kids. She took them away and isolated them like Jody was doing to her. Jody manipulated her into thinking and knowing that she had to be isolated and that she had to do those things.
This is where the responsibility of the father comes in, because father's rights are a thing, especially in Utah.
Mm-hmm.
They're very much a thing. And that's when we saw this in the Lori Daybell case, where her now deceased husband had gone to the police and said, she emptied my house. She took my kids. I don't know, you know, what can you help me with? You have to have a spine. And he did not. And then it fell to the family members. I think these sisters, do you think they knew the extent?
I don't think they knew the extent.
Okay.
I think that if they knew the extent, the entire family would have gone crazy.
But it was to a point that I'm sure that the next Thanksgiving, if these two hadn't have been arrested in August or whatever it was, at the next Thanksgiving, they would have been like, you can't come over anymore, Ruby, because you're talking crazy. It sounds like they were at that point.
They were.
They were like, we're done with your crazy cult talk.
But Ruby had gotten to the point, and it's so interesting that it happens in a lot of abuse cases. There's four or five kids in the houses, but only two are getting abused.
Right. What is that? Well, they were the little ones, so they could be controlled.
Exactly.
The other ones were going to school right. on the daily.
Well, those other kids should have been going to school as well. They're 10 yeah, and 12.
I know, but because they were little, she could control them still.
I don't know what the deal is,
I don't know.
There's always this, they choose the ones yeah. that they can control or that they happen to have access to the most.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It's very crazy. As you were reading the, as you started reading it, I heard a statement from Chad, who is Ruby's oldest son.
Yes.
And Chad was well known on their YouTube channel mm-hmm. for being in trouble constantly. He was sent to a special outdoor wilderness camp for troubled children. And it sounds to me like he never deserved to be there. He was just a regular, you know, stupid kid, right? A kid just mouthing off. But he has been on social media and he has made some statements. He refuses to make statements to the police to the reporters. He doesn't want to speak to anybody. He's had numerous reporters. I've seen them interviewed saying we've tried to get in touch with them directly.
Yeah.
But he plays on video games and he's on Twitch.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what that is.
It's a platform to play video games on.
So he's on that platform and he has had people record him and people have asked him in these groups, like things about his mom, what has gone on. One of the statements that he made actually he was on social media making it was, what did he think of his mother's statement? Because he was in the courtroom along with the older sister. Mm-hmm. And the father when she was sentenced.
Okay, yeah.
People said that he looked straight ahead while she was speaking. He was looking at the judge for the most part.
Yeah.
He was not looking at her. He said that from his experience and what he knows of his mother, and he's seen her in a lot of situations,
yep.
she seemed sincere when she delivered this.
Her closing statement, as yes. I would call it. Okay.
And I think to me that gave me some sort of understanding of this a little bit, that she was sincere in what she was saying. So when she's sitting there saying, she's thanking the officers. It's yes. like, it's almost like she's accepting an award.
It's right? the worst award ever. So the last two lines say, and finally, I'm sorry for twisting God's word and distorting his doctrines. I'm so bugged that she keeps using that word. Distorting. I'm so bothered by that. Uh-huh. Yeah. My greatest desire is to stand in his court someday, spotless and confident. Judge Walton, I know that standing before you today is a necessary step towards that end. Thank you. Thank you to you and your staff for facilitating my opportunity to take accountability and to answer for my charges. I am humbled and willing to serve a prison sentence as long as it takes to continue unraveling all of this information I have believed and bought, swallowed, and acted out, and for my family to heal and for the community to heal. And I understand that this is going to take time. I'm committed to continuing my learning until all of my toxic layers are shed and I am ready to re-enter as a contributing member of our beautiful society. My toxic layers are shed sounds like something that she got from a cult.
It's so crazy. She starts making an analogy about being this mother hen. I think his punishments and everything that happened to these children were based on her wanting more subscribers from the beginning.
And when that glaring light of fame was taken away because people were questioning her parenting, suddenly that's gone. She turned it to something that is so wild. Like, she's going to find another way to make money, but it's going to be so deep and dark that I don't know.
I think she went to the same thing. It was just now a different facilitator.
Yeah.
This connections thing, again, I think she thinks she's something. Because she's going to, I think
Ruby.
That Ruby thinks she's something else. Like, she's the best mom in the world. She's the mother of six.
I'm going to have this thing.
I'm going to show everybody, you have to be this. She's sitting there with her husband saying, you know, you have to do the hard things as parents. You can't be their friend. She's not wrong on some of the things she says, but the way she's saying it is just so condescending. And
the way she did it was so out of left field. It's like, no, you do have to do the hard things. You absolutely do. And no, you don't need to be there. I have friends. I don't need my kid as a friend or whatever. And they don't need me as their best friend. They need a peer. Thank you. Yes, no, that's all correct. But then it got so twisted. Can I say it? It got distorted.
It got really distorted. Please don't use that word.
I'm not going to.
Do you have lust for your husband? That's really what's wrong with you.
Is that what's wrong? Because I think he would disagree.
We'll have to ask him.
That's it.
Well, in contrast Ruby's statement, there is Jody's statement. Mm-hmm. I will read that because I'm going to read the entire thing.
Oh, let's cuddle in here and get comfy.
She says, I sincerely love these children. I desire for them to heal physically and emotionally. One of the reasons I did not go to trial is I did not want them to emotionally relive the experience, which would have been detrimental to them. My hope and prayer is that they will heal and move forward to have beautiful lives. I'm willing to submit to what the state feels would be an appropriate amount of time served to make retribution as an outcome.
Yeah, I got news for you. The court is going to decide what the appropriate amount of time is. Thank you, though, for giving us all permission, Jody. She is such a... And that was the end of it. Sorry. Yeah. I wasn't interrupting Denise.
No, you were not.
That's the end of her statement.
End of story right
there.
It was there.
Two sentences, really. Mm-hmm. Three sentences. It's insanity. Those are the words of a truly, not healthy person. I do want to say Judge Watson spoke directly to Hildebrandt before imposing the sentence. I love what this judge said. This circumstance is largely of your making. Your conduct was disastrous for these children. And in this case, you terrorized these children. Mm. Thank you, Judge.
Thank you for saying every... He said it way nicer than I would have.
Well, he's a judge. I mean, he has to kind of keep it together.
Yeah.
But you're right. It was very much very professionally said and very nicely done.
Well, this was a case that I've wanted to do for a long time. So thank you for indulging.
Yes.
Thank you for sticking with us through two separate episodes.
No, it was so fun.
It was so much. And I'm assuming between now and the time we come back on here, there's going to be some more psychos out there that we can talk about.
Oh, can't wait.
And gather. In the meantime, if you guys have any ideas of subjects you want us to cover, people you want us to interview, obviously we can't, get all of them. I mean, Bradley Cooper probably isn't available, but I could
check. Have you tried?
I mean, no.
Okay, well.
I could message him. See, come on. DM, slip in his DMs.
Slip into his DMs. You love to do that.
I don't really know how.
I don't either.
It's a problem. I've never slipped into anybody's DMs.
Oh, well, we'll teach you how to do that.
Oh.
Yeah, nothing bad can come from that.
Said everybody.
But no, Denise is correct. If you please communicate with us through Instagram and Facebook, Two Average Girls Podcast. We'd love to hear from you. In the meantime, we hope you enjoy the next few months. We know we will, and we'll be back with some great stories to tell, and we'll see you when we return. I'm Ann Police.
And I'm Denise Cooper.
We are Two Average Girls. We'll see you next time.
Episodes of Two Average Girls are free wherever you get your podcasts.
Be sure to hit the follow or subscribe button on the Two Average Girls main page so you never have to go searching for new episodes.
Our editor is Aiden Bloomstein.
Our social media producer is Samantha Stone.
And original music for Two Average Girls is by Jason Fries.